long to make a difference? Would you like to leave a legacy? Would you like to look back in 10 or 20 or 30 years and say, my life really mattered? If your heart resonates with that, then stay with us. We're going to learn God's game plan for leaving a legacy that lasts.
Thanks for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Living on the Edge. Living on the Edge is an international teaching and discipleship ministry featuring the Bible teaching of Chip Ingram, senior pastor of Venture Christian Church in Los Gatos, California. I'm Dave Durley, and today Chip debunks the idea that greatness is off limits to Christians. On the contrary, what we'll discover today is that pursuing greatness in God's eyes is something the Lord wants for each of His children. Now, if you have to miss a portion of today's broadcast, why not consider downloading the Chip Ingram app? It's free, and it just takes a few minutes. Never miss another edition of Living on the Edge. Get all the details at livingontheedge.org. Now let's join Chip for his message, Empower Great People, from 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2.
As we think about good to great in God's eyes, we're kind of moving toward the end of this series, and I have a question for you. How do you measure true greatness? I mean, if you're Forbes magazine, you measure true greatness by a big dollar sign and how much either people or a business produce, right? If you're People magazine, you measure true greatness by either how popular people are or how pretty they are, correct? If you're the NBA or the NFL or the NHL, you measure true greatness by what? Who makes the all-star team or who's the MVP? I'd suggest from the moment that you can talk and walk to the moment that you die, that we in the human species have one crucial question that we're always asking. And the question is, who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? I mean, two little boys, right? They're 6 years old. My dad can beat up your dad, right? We're always comparing about greatness. And so it doesn't surprise us as we jump into this session that even after 3 years of walking with Jesus, after seeing miracles, after hearing the greatest sermons in the world, after having informal conversations, right when we see that Jesus is about to come into his kingdom, or so they perceive, we're going to listen in on a conversation among his most faithful followers, his most godly followers, the people that have seen the greatest miracles. And we're going to listen in on what's on their heart toward the very end of Jesus' ministry. We pick up the story in Mark chapter 10. There is a bold request beginning in verse 35. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. That's pretty bold, isn't it? Yes. Dear mom and dad, could you just sign the bottom of the check and I'll go cash it and write in the rest, right? You know? What do you want me to do for you? He asked. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other on your left in your glory. Plain and simple, they wanted to be famous. They wanted acclaim. They wanted respect. They wanted glory. They wanted personal exaltation. They had the sense that you're going to come into your kingdom, and their mindset was a political kingdom at this point, and Rome is going to fall, and you're going to be the new king, and they kind of had pictured in their mind, I'm on the right, you're on the left. That's a pretty bold request. This is followed by an indignant response in verse 41. When the 10 other disciples heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. I mean, indignant's a strong word. I mean, this ticked off. I can't believe you do that. How? The shame of that. Why are they so indignant? Because those two guys asked first. That's why. Right? I mean, they're ticked off like, you know what? You got to him first. Of course, they probably hid it behind pious, righteous. How terrible of you two. And then what we have is a radical redefinition by Jesus about greatness. Jesus called them together and he said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentile lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, now notice this, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. And then he gives this amazing illustration using himself. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. Notice very carefully, he didn't reprove John and James for wanting to be great. Notice he didn't reprove the 10 for being indignant. He pulls them all together and he says there's an issue. And by the way, if you read the Gospels carefully, this is not the first time this issue has come up. And as you read them very carefully, you find they argue about something on the very last night. Remember? The very last night he's with them, they're still arguing about who's the greatest. But what he does is he shifts the paradigm. And he said, the desire to be great is not wrong. It's how you get there. If you want to be great in man's eyes, you got to lord it over people. You know, you got to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated or Forbes. You got to have power and position and prestige and beauty and all what the world says. But if you want to be great in God's eyes, you need to be the servant of all. If you want to be first, you need to be the slave. You need to understand. In fact, I love the summary of this for me is true greatness is serving others for the glory of God. That's really what he's saying. I was in this study for 2 or 3 years, and out of the blue, I had a book sent to me. Does this ever happen to you? Someone just drops a book in the mail, and I'm sure I met this person because it had a little inscription, to Chip with appreciation, CJ. And so I'm sure I kind of met him at one of those, you know, like Christian bookseller type things or something. And it was a thin little book, which always attracts me because I can read it quickly. But the name of the book was Humility. And then the subtitle was True Greatness. And I thought, you know, that's what I've been teaching. Maybe God sent me this book. C.J. Mahaney writes on page 44 of his little book, Humility, in each of our lives, if we're to have any possibility of becoming truly great in God's eyes, it means turning upside down the entrenched worldly ideas of our own definition of greatness. The difference couldn't be more stark, he writes. As sinfully and culturally defined, pursuing greatness looks like this. Individuals motivated by self-interest, self-indulgence, and a false sense of self-sufficiency pursue selfish ambition for the purpose of self-glorification. Did anyone pick up a little common denominator in any of that? Contrast that with the pursuit of true greatness as biblically defined. And then I love this line. I thought, wow, I must be on track. Serving others for the glory of God. This is the genuine expression of humility. This is true greatness as our Savior defines it. Conclusion, then, is we become great in God's eyes by helping others become greater than ourselves. Isn't that interesting? We become great in God's eyes by helping others become greater than ourselves. The Apostle Paul would put it this way to Timothy. Timothy's got a new assignment. Paul's invested in his life in Timothy. Timothy, I want you to really become great. And so the things that you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, I want you to entrust to faithful or reliable men who can teach others also. Do you get it? Great Christians empower great people. That's the summary. If you want to be great in God's eyes, it's going about life trying to figure out how can I help other people literally become greater than me. And if you want to put a little note, just write in the corner of your notes, John the Baptist. No one says it better than John. When John meets Jesus, when Jesus' popularity eclipses his and his disciples are concerned about, you know, hey, John, you know, your market share is going down in the spiritual community. And remember what John says? I must decrease and he must increase. And then I don't know, have you ever kind of done a little study about what Jesus says about John the Baptist? He says, of those born among women, you know, no one is what than John? Greater. Why? Because John's sole purpose was to make other people greater than himself. True greatness in God's eyes is empowering other great Christians. And so the Apostle Paul said, you want to invest wisely, and you see 4 generations. The Apostle Paul wants to help Timothy be great in God's eyes. So he serves him and teaches him and loves him. Timothy, I want you to help reliable, faithful, a select group of people that really have a heart for God. I want you to help them become great in God's eyes so that they in turn can help other people become great in God's eyes. Generation 4, generation 3, generation 2, generation 1. 4 spiritual generations of impact is what the Apostle Paul did. In the Old Testament, you have some great examples of this where Moses is, great, right? And Joshua is outside his tent. Moses gets the law, Joshua conquers the land. Even greater impact. Or you have Elijah and Elisha. You know, Elisha boldly prays for a double portion of his spirit, and we see Elisha doing even greater miracles than Elijah. Or you have a situation where Eli is the one that mentors Samuel. In the New Testament, you have Jesus, of course, doing what? Helping 12 other people, 11 of 12, and then they get a substitute. He has an impact in this kind of a geographical area. And by the end of the first century, those 12 multiply their life to literally reach almost the whole known world. You have Paul investing in Timothy. You have Barnabas reclaiming John Mark so that by the end of Paul's life, he'll say, you know, John Mark is of great use for me. Please ask him to bring the parchments in my cloak. And here was a lost cause, but someone saw potential and took someone who had fallen away, who had failed, who'd really struggled, and Barnabas found him and made him greater than himself. How in the world can we empower great people? Let me give you, in terms of this whole session, I think it's the most, if you don't get anything else, if you ever open these notes up again, if you ever look at this again, if you ever think about, you know, greatness in God's eyes, the next phrase is what I'd want you to circle and say, this is what matters most. My summary here is that good Christians live the life. I mean, good Christians live the life. I mean, they love God. They walk in integrity. They're faithful to their marriage partners. They're in the scriptures because they want to hear from God. They're caring. They discover their spiritual gift. They're involved in their local church. They give the first portion of their finances and then proportionally out of heart of love and care. They're the kind of parents that really are concerned about their kids and do all they can to help their kids grow up and be men and women. They're single people that live pure lives. They go on short-term mission trips. Good Christians live the life, and it's wonderful, and you have to, and you need to, and God expects it. But the difference between good Christians and great Christians is good Christians really live the life. Great Christians leave a legacy. Great Christians leave a legacy. See, you can be a good Christian, and you can walk with God, and you can do what God wants you to do, and you can love people, and you can obey Him. And then when your life is over or my life is over and they take that little square of dirt and they drop you in it or they drop you and burn you and put you in one of those urns, however it works these days, if there's a period after the end of your life instead of a dash, then you are a good Christian. If there's a dash where your life, because you poured it into the lives of others, who poured into the lives of others, who poured into the lives of the others, you are a great Christian. Great Christians leave a legacy. Great Christians don't just live the life. Great Christians live the life in such a way that they become like a Paul to a Timothy to a faithful person to others, so that the impact of the grace of God in their life multiplies and multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. When God sees that, that's the difference between good Christians and great Christians. Great Christians empower great people. And so what I would want to ask and answer is, how can you and how can I leave a legacy for God's glory? And that's what I want to talk about in our time together. First of all, let's get very, very practical, and I don't mean this tritely, but let's get clear on what we're talking about. Dawson Trotman, who was the founder of the Navigators, amazing man, high school education, he said, activity is no substitute for productivity. Productivity is no substitute for reproduction. So there's a lot of Christians that are active, doing a lot of things, going to a lot of meetings. And there's even a lot of Christians that are very productive. They produce things. There's fruit. There's very few Christians that are reproducing their life, where a legacy, a chain, a spiritual lineage is being developed. And so the first thing you need to do is you want to pray. You know, God wants this to happen. It's commanded. It's in His will. It's on His heart. Jesus modeled it. The Apostle Paul did it. Elijah did it. Moses did it. I mean, the great Christians, they leave a legacy. And so James 1:5 says, if any of you lack wisdom, in other words, you don't know how to live life skillfully. You don't know exactly how to do what God's called you to do. If anybody lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men generously and without reproach, and He'll give it to you. And so the first and foremost thing is to seriously pray and say, Lord, yes, I want to be a good Christian. But Father, I know you want me to be a great Christian. I would like to leave a legacy, so I need to be discerning. I want to help many people, but I want to train a few. I want to spread a lot of grace around a lot of people, but I want to focus and invest my life. I want to train and build into a few. And so the first thing I think is to pray. The second thing I think is very important is look under your own roof. 1 Timothy 3:4. I mean, it's not about who are these people out there that I ought to invest my life in. I ought to start with who lives under my roof that I'm morally responsible for, that I'm spiritually responsible for. There's an amazing correlation that's we're not doing well here. I mean, how many of us have met pastors' kids or missionaries' kids that you go, whoa, right? And you think to yourself, I'm not sure what they were doing, but their kids didn't get it at home. Or they were so busy helping other people that their kids rebelled. And I'll tell you, the other area, the group of people that only the poorest of the poor do worse with their children than executives, according to Forbes magazine. What it takes to be a high-powered executive, the drive, the focus, are all the kind of things that makes it very difficult to be a very good parent. And often people are very successful with their ladder leaning against the wrong wall. The percentage of children that are in counseling, the percentage of children that struggle with depression, the percentage of children that have attempted suicide, the percentage of children who have major issues with drug and rehab. You go among America's top executives and they've done studies on, because they have to pay insurance on all those things. And only the poorest of the poor have a worse track record. And so my thing is, you know what, where are we going to start? You want to leave a legacy? Start under your own roof. I watched my wife, model this in our home. She is actually a good communicator. She doesn't like to get up in front of people much, but she did it for about 300 women, and there was an amazing response, and it happened to, part of it got on the radio, and so pretty soon people all over the country, this was probably 10 years ago or more, were asking her to come and speak at their church. And she said, no, 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 no. And, you know, I'm her husband going, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I'll watch the kids for a weekend. That'd really be good. She goes, Chip, you don't understand. She's really good. Everything that I'm not really good at, she's really good at, you know. I bring some strengths to help her out. But I mean, like this whole focus and boundary issue, she just looked at me and she goes, Chip, I can go and speak at these weekends and encourage women and sprinkle a little bit of grace here and there. She said, when we get to heaven, our greatest impact will not be who we talk to and impact a 16th of an inch thick. Our greatest impact will be the kids in our home. And she said, you know what? If God wants me to do that when our kids are a little older and they're grown, fine, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. And I mean, my kids watch my wife pray early in the morning. She read to them. Early on, the very structured family time. Older, I had each of my kids learn to spend time with God on their own. Then I looked at struggling areas, and yes, yes, I confess, I'll give you 10 bucks if you read this book on worldviews. I'll give you 15 bucks if you read Mere Christianity and write me a report on it. But we had a very strategic plan to build in and disciple our children, knowing that that is what mattered most. In my daytimer, we didn't have PDAs back then. I wrote in my schedule, and when I wrote in my schedule, I wrote in personal time to spend with my kids. And it all wasn't just spiritual. Some of it was just having fun. But I wanted to invest in my kids. The greatest legacy we'll ever leave starts under our roof. Good Christians live the life. Great Christians leave a legacy. Leaving a legacy means you help many you train a few.
Chip will be right back, but if you're just joining us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. And today's talk, Empower Great People, is from Chip's series, Good to Great in God's Eyes. To get this series for yourself, your family, or a small group, just go to livingontheedge.org today. And don't miss the new revised book that includes questions and additional instruction at the end of each chapter. For a limited time, you'll find the 3-pack book bundles are deeply discounted. Jump online and check out all the good to great resources at livingontheedge.org. Well, Chip, before you come back with some application from today's teaching, I wonder if you'd take a minute and just give us a little background on the Real God Initiative that our listeners will continue to hear about during this series.
Sure, Dave. I'd be glad to, because I know a number of people get introduced to Living on the Edge as, you know, a podcast or as someone passes on the app or they hear us on the radio, and they may not know the scope of what we do.
Sure.
And so when they hear about the Real God Project, this has been in the works for well over a year, and it started with a book. Then early this year, we rolled out our Real God Workbook, the online course and small group. And so the Real God Family Devotional will come out on our app, and then we'll take the Real God to churches all across America. Now, I haven't even mentioned the fact that it's translated into Chinese and Arabic, and if you're feeling a little overwhelmed, here's what I want to tell you. We are so committed to help people see God for who He is that there is a group of people that have given generously and a group of people that have given month after month after month. So we have invested literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to take this to people around the world, especially those who can't afford it. And so I want to say a special thank you to those that sometimes you don't feel like you're doing that much. Like it's only $20 or $30 a month, and what good am I doing? I want to tell you, you're at the heartbeat of what God does, not just for the ministry, but especially this project of the Real God. Thanks so much for all you do. And if you're listening and thinking, you know, I could do that. You know, God's using Living on the Edge in my life. I would like to get involved monthly. Dave will give you some information about how you can help.
Thanks, Chip. Well, if you want to be part of ministering to others across America and around the world, today would be a great day to join the team. To give a gift online, just go to livingontheedge.org. Or if you prefer, just give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. On behalf of Chip and the entire staff here at Living on the Edge, thank you for your prayers and your financial support. Chip, I think this idea of developing others is becoming a lost art. I think we all long to be great, but most of us don't know how to leave a legacy that will outlive us.
Dave, I think it's just the instant environment of our culture of now, fame, make it happen. You need to be the center of attention. And God made us to personally want to be great. What I would say to people is you got to define greatness more than just the moment. And true greatness really is helping other people become greater than yourself. And so let me give you this. One, view the long haul. Ask yourself, what am I doing today that really is going to make a difference, not just in the next 10 or 20 or 30 years, but when I'm dead? Two, who are the people that God for sure wants me to invest in to help them become great? And so you got to start, if you're married, with who you're married to, and then you got to think about your kids. And you know what? It's slow. It's frustrating. You wonder if it's ever going to make any difference. But we are at that stage with 4 adult kids that I will say the greatest joy in my life and Teresa's is nothing that we've ever accomplished. It is absolutely what we see them doing and then see them doing in the lives of other people. I have a story next broadcast I'll share with you that will really give you some spiritual ammunition to live for the long haul.
Well, before we wrap it up today, there's one more thing I'd like you to check out. For those of you who are thinking ahead to Mother's Day and Father's Day, we have a 2-CD set from Teresa Ingram's series, Precious in His Sight, perfect for Mother's Day, and a different 2-CD set of Chip series, Portrait of a Father,
perfect for Father's Day. Each of these sets is bundled in a discounted pack of two. And besides the set discounts, we have bulk rates available if your church would like to give these as gifts to your entire congregation for the upcoming holidays. Maybe your church orders them, or maybe you order them for your church. Better yet, gather some friends or your small group and go in together. This would be a great opportunity to think creatively about how you could love on your church family. To order Precious in His Sight by Teresa Ingram and Portrait of a Father by Chip Ingram, just go to livingontheedge.org. Or better yet, give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. Tomorrow on Living on the Edge, Chip will continue our current series, Good to Great in God's Eyes. Until then, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for joining us for this edition of Living on the Edge.